It's time for Rebel Extra. This is your team, Las Vegas, and we want to hear from you. Call us at 364-1100. That's 364-1100. Now, live from the Finley Toyota Studios, it's Bernie Fratto and John Von Tobel.
Well, you know, the coaching profession is often referred to as a fraternity. And in this young season, well, that's been very evident. Cal State Fullerton, well, head coach Dedrick Taylor, he was mentored by Marvin Menzies and even schooled when the Titans visited the Thomas and Mack on November 19th. And tonight, TCU head coach Jamie Dixon, well, his name was bandied about last spring during UNLV's tumultuous head coaching search. And if TCU assistant coach Ryan Miller's name sounds familiar, well, it should, because he was an assistant coach here at UNLV the last few years. But when Dixon, Miller, Menzies et al. Convened tonight, it was anything but a reunion. It was actually a very hard-fought battle, albeit an artful one, as both teams combined for 32 turnovers, 28 missed three-pointers, and 17 missed free throws. And in the end, the TCU Horned Frogs got the better of the deal, besting the Rebels 63-59. But they really had to hang on for dear life. Welcome back to another edition of Rebel Extra, the postgame show devoted to you, the fans and supporters of UNLV running Rebel basketball. Rebel Extra is brought to you by our proud sponsors, Angel Park, Legacy, and Durango Hills. It'll be sports' most complete golf course experiences in Las Vegas. Diamondback Land Surveying, from brick walls to the Taj Mahal. Diamondback Land Surveying are your land surveying experts. 8-ball bail bonds. If you had more fun at the game than the law allows, call 8-ball bail bonds to get you out of jail. Pizza My Dear, with a smoke and lunch deal. A 12-inch pizza for only $5. With two locations to serve you, go to pizzamydear.com. We'll be coming to you after every game this season. We want to hear from you. 364-1100. This is your team, Las Vegas, so give us a call, be part of the action. Or you can text your thoughts at 69187. Please preface with ESPN. Before I go any further, let me introduce my broadcast team. To my left, turning all the dials, keeping us glued together, is producer extraordinaire Bobby Machado. He'll also take your calls at 364-1100, and to my right, joined by the man for all seasons. You hear him every day, weekdays, on Cofield and Company. That would be John Von Tobel. John, the Rebels and the Longhorns, no strangers. Obviously, they were former Mountain West Conference rivals. And all time, the Rebels beat TCU by 9 out of 10. They've beaten TCU Horned Frogs 9 times out of 10. At the Thomas and Mack, but not tonight.
Nope. Jamie Dixon came out, put that 2-3 zone on the Rebels, and they had absolutely nothing this evening. And that was the most disappointing aspect of the game. You thought that when they came out in that zone, maybe they'd be able to break it, but they looked completely lost. You pair that with the fact that they couldn't stop turning the ball over, and it was an ugly night for UNLV.
Rebels come out right out of the gate. Oh. Jalen Poyser hits a long three with a hand in his face, 3-0. Tyrone Green hits a long three, Rebels 6-0. All of a sudden, Ofebu hits a three. It's 11-2. Jamie Dixon calls timeout at 15:54. Enter a rim protector by the name of Vlad Brozianski. But you're right, John. It was the 2-1-2 zone, at times 2-3 zone. The Rebels had nothing, and you mean that literally, not just figuratively, because they really even they didn't get into an semblance of an offense.
No, and that was the frustrating part about it, because when you watched, it was just passing it around the key from corner to corner, wing to wing. There was nothing really run. There were no screens run at times. And then you would see a lot was what we talked about this right before the show, the bounce pass into the paint that got deflected by a TCU player that resulted in a turnover. And that was essentially like a pattern over and over and over again. And when you watched it, you thought that they were making progress on offense, and then you watch tonight, and it was just deep threes and no semblance of a game.
And the turnovers, which total 19, six by Jovan Mooring, someone who we have high hopes that might be our point guard. Yep. And there were times where Mooring and Poyser were on the floor in the first half, and Ochio Fabi with 5 turnovers. As you said, they didn't attack the gaps, settled often, too often for the long-range threes. When they weren't dropping, that became a problem. Still, they hung around and played tough, but a lot of immaturity on both sides of the ball tonight. And what I mean by that is a lot of those turnovers weren't exactly forced. They were illegal screens. They were bad decisions. There were mental mistakes.
Alley-oops thrown to ghosts who weren't going up for
them.
Jovan Mooring is the one I'm speaking of, which was ridiculous. I don't know what that was.
And there were defensive deficiencies as well. A lot of times, a player go for a steal instead of playing position defense. Guess what? You're out of position. Phone lines are lighting up. This is a caller show, and we're going to go to all the callers right away.
Gave you the hook, Bobby, but
we'll address that later. 3.5. All right. He's John Von Tobel. I'm Bernie Fratto. The Rebels fall 63-59 tonight. The Rebel Extra show is off and running once again. This is a caller-based show. Want to hear from you, Las Vegas? You are what make the show. So without further ado, let's go out to the phone lines. We're joined by Cameron. Cameron, get us started tonight at Rebel Extra. What are your thoughts?
Guys, how's it going?
Good, Cameron. How are you?
Good, thanks. I just want to preface this by saying that I was against the Menzies hire. I thought it was a move out of desperation after Chris Beard left. With that said, though, into the offseason, I jumped on board. You know, was excited about the season. I am excited about the season. I think we have some talent on the floor. I like our staff. You listen to Coach Menzies, he knows what he's talking about. I have confidence that the team will get better. So I'm on board. But I think part of being on board is also having criticism for a coach. And I think tonight, the decision to play Mooring for as many minutes as he did was a bad one. I mean, I don't know how you do that. When a guy is giving you absolutely nothing on offense, except for turning the ball over, and on defense he's nothing special. I think that Coach Menzies got a little bit nervous, maybe, in one of the biggest games to start the season, and shortened that bench way too much. We haven't seen a lot of Zion Morgan, but I like the little that I've seen of him. He's a great defender, seems to make good decisions, and Mooring certainly didn't do that tonight. Aside from that, I really liked what Dwayne brought tonight. Great energy, played within himself pretty well, was able to be aggressive without drawing too many fouls after the first couple that he picked up. Still optimistic, but really I think that decision to stick with Mooring was just one that's going to really cost us the game.
One quick rejoinder to that, Cameron. As you know, there was no Christian Jones tonight. We're going to try to catch up with Mark Anderson about 10:30 to find out what's going on there. And obviously no checking to Ben DeBelle. So could it be a situation where he needed to rely on his backcourt tonight because of a lack of bodies?
Yeah, that's a good point. Although I would say we haven't seen enough from Mooring to know that he can score at this level. He's had some games where he scored, but a lot of it's been free throws and penetration. He's not the poiser type player. You know he can score some threes and get you points. So I don't know. I think that we still had more options in the backcourt, specifically Zion Morgan, who I'm not sure he has a turnover in the minutes he's played this year, but you know, it just seemed like there was some tightening up there that maybe shouldn't have happened.
All right, thanks for calling. Basically, it's a reflection of inexperience and immaturity. I think he's right about Mooring. I can't defend Jovan Mooring.
Well, I think Menzies left him in there because, one, we still have this question mark around the point guard position. And Cameron actually mentioned what makes Mooring good in the fact that he's one of the best guys off the dribble on this team that can penetrate, draw fouls, and hit his free throws. Now, obviously, tonight he was not under control like we saw the first two games, where it was just wild drives to the basket, you know, silly passes, the alley-oop. I believe it was Kapetter Baxter, one of the two that he tried to throw up there. He had a bad game tonight. There's no denying that. But I think the reason he left him out there is because you're trying to solidify him as your backup point guard. And with him on the floor with Jalen, they make a good tandem together. Granted, again, tonight didn't show up. But I think you're still going to see him out there because Marvin thinks that he can provide minutes at the point guard and decent ones at that because of his penetration ability.
Cameron referenced Zion Morgan, the 6'5" yep. freshman out of Chicago. The one thing about Jovan Mooring, this is only his fifth official Division I game, but his third year playing college basketball. So at least he has some experience. But this team, it's the word I used last week, maturity. They've got to mature. And the self-inflicted wounds. TCU is a decent team. They come in here 4-0, but according to Ken Pom, their strength of schedule was 331. Ours is 335. Hold that thought. We'll come back to that. Let's go back out to the phone lines. We're joined by Bob. Bob, thanks for checking in tonight on Rebel Extra. What are your thoughts?
My question is number 12. I can't pronounce the name, but I was watching it.
Georgi Slavonchinin.
Yeah, that's the guy. He was able to make threes, and I just don't understand why Menzies didn't even put him in the second half, because that's what we needed, somebody who was consistent with threes. But he ignored him completely. Not only that, but he's over 10 or 11?
Yeah, he's close to 7 feet.
Yeah, well, I don't know why in the heck he didn't put him in. To me, it doesn't even make sense. I was just wondering what your thoughts are.
I think, first of all, he's experimenting with certain combinations and rotations, and I thought Troy Baxter was very active in the second half. That might have been it, and I think we have to temper the threes, Bob, that Georgi Slavonchinin made the other night when they were up by about 40 in a game which I said quite clearly was probably some false sense of security.
Yeah, and when you watch Georgi out there, as much as I love the guy, defensively he's a tad bit shaky, and he's also somewhat limited in his offensive game. I mean, he can hit threes, but there was a moment in the first half where he had a clean path to the basket and he tried to take it off the dribble.
He's not confident offensively.
He looks like a baby horse kind of running after birth.
Right.
You know?
But he did get rebounds.
Let's see, how many did he get? They got 3 rebounds in his 7 minutes played. I mean,
that's fair.
Yeah, but again, he's not the most physical being down low, and I think
he's got to get a lot stronger.
Yeah, I think that's why you didn't see him too much.
And that may have
been
the reason. Thanks again, Bob, for checking in. Let's go back out to the phone lines. Joined by Rich. Rich, sure. Thanks for checking in tonight. How are you?
Okay, I'm good. Good.
What do you got for us, buddy?
Well, we're just looking to mention about 4 things that I heard on the radio tonight, and just see what the guys think about it.
What did you hear that you'd like us to comment on?
Basically, bench points, no point guard, and the turnovers, terrible.
Well, the bench points, horrific. In the first half alone, TCU outscored UNLV 18-2. The turnovers, 19. We've talked about that, taking care of the ball. John Von Tobel brought up a good point, but it was there staring us in the face. This team's going to see a lot of zone defenses this year. There's no doubt about it.
That's correct.
Well, and something to tie into the bench, too, and something I had a question about is, I don't know what's going on with Ben Coupette and his minutes, because you see one game he'll play about 15, 16, 17, provide good quality minutes, and then the next game he'll play 8. Game after that, he'll put in about 13, 14, and then this game he only played 3. And I think he can provide more off of the bench, and I don't know what the thinking was in not letting him play as much, because they needed a guy who could penetrate and attack that zone, and they didn't give Coupette a chance.
That's correct. Even the coach mentioned it tonight on the after show. He didn't use his bench as much as he should, because, I mean, there was no bench scoring. What, they got 2 points off the bench?
Yeah, outscored 34-2.
Yeah, terrible. That and the turnovers. I don't know if it was a Northern Arizona game that, you know, you got 110 points, you know, against something, and if it gets in the kids' heads, that's the easy way to play, and all of a sudden you come up with a team that is equal to them, and then they start to struggle, and so now that's the coaching. That's coaching right there. So I need the coach needs to get better at that and get it into these kids' heads that they need to score, they need to take care of the ball. Too many turnovers, way too many turnovers.
And that's all right. Thanks again for checking in. And that's been an issue during pretty much all the games. What we had talked about was that those types of, in many cases, self-inflicted wounds, they were able to get away with against the likes of Northern Arizona and Cal State Fullerton and UC Riverside. Jamie Dixon, listen, let's face it, his first-year coach coming over from Pitt to TCU. TCU's a Big 12 team. They're a program on the rise, very much so. I don't even think they'll be 500 in the Big 12. But when you step up in class and play a major conference team, you can't get away with the mistakes that the Rebels have been getting away with. That's why I used the term last week, false sense of security.
Yeah, and to Marvin Menzies' credit, according to Tyler Bischoff in the post-game presser, he took the blame for the zone offense, said they prepared for TCU to play a lot of man, and he based it on Jamie Dixon's pass. So when you look at the offensive
struggles, interesting is they came out in man.
Mm-hmm.
They came out in man, and they actually were very aggressively defending the perimeter, hands and faces. But when Poyser comes out, Jackson 3, Tyrell Green Jackson 3, and Ofebu Jackson 3, and it's 11-2, he makes an adjustment, puts in a rim protector. I love the guy, Brodziansky.
Mm-hmm.
That adjustment changed the game. Back out.
Go ahead, John. You call him a rim protector. He scored 8 of their first, I think, 11 points for TCU. But so he had some success down low.
Very much so. Yeah. But he was really solid on defense as well, had a couple of blocks early. Back out to the phone lines, we're joined by Josh. Josh, thanks for checking into Rebel Extra tonight.
Yeah, how you doing, guys? I just wanted to comment on what Jonathan said about Mooring. I disagree. I mean, he said he can penetrate. Well, what?
Oop, you cut out right after you were talking.
Or you take a bad shot.
Hey, start your comment over again. You broke up.
Talking about Mooring. Yeah. Can you guys hear me okay? Yeah, Jonathan mentioned in the game. Well, I kind of just...
Reset him, Bobby. Hey, you know what? That's the curse. You're trying to talk bad about my boy Mooring, and that's what happens. Phone lines go out.
Whoever invented cell phones should have done a better job. Try back, Josh. Back out to the phone lines. We're joined by Jameson. Jameson, thanks for checking in tonight. Rebel Extra, what do you got?
Yeah, it's funny because I was going to mention Mooring as well. I was a big Dave Rice fan. I was probably one of the few, but it was fun watching him play. But I have to say, I like Menzies. He seems to know what he's doing. He's you know, I got to give him a chance. He runs the floor. I love how that offense attacks. Now, I know the horses aren't here yet, but I will say that Mooring guy, I know he had a bad game tonight, so I'm not sticking up for that, but I love how he sees the floor. A couple of those passes were over Baxter's head, but I think Baxter should give a better effort on some of those plays, so I'll count that to him, not so much Mooring. But anybody that's looking for a home run pass or looking down the floor, that's what we need. A little more fast break, a little more wide open offense. I like it. Not too disappointed, actually.
All right. Appreciate your call. Look, the Rebels showed flashes tonight, and some of the old ugly habits, you know, reared their head. They had a stretch of 4 minutes and 20 seconds in the first half, no points. They went from leading 19-17 to trailing 24-19. However, you've got to give TCU credit because they stayed strong with that zone. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to see more zones now.
Oh, for sure, because UNLV hasn't really shown that they're a consistent three-point shooting team. A lot of these threes that we've seen them hit, what is it? It's end of the shot clock so deep, they're shooting it from the U or the V from midcourt. It's ridiculous.
And the Rebels missed 10 more three-pointers tonight.
Mm-hmm. And when it comes to Joe Von Mooring, I mean, the thing with him is, again, yes, he had a bad game, and that's going to be recent memory for everybody that calls in right now. But he is good at pushing the pace, and we've seen that with him throughout these first four games. He is a good point guard at pushing the pace, getting these guys to run in transition. He's made some good passes, and when he doesn't hit his shots, we saw it a couple games ago, he'll hit all 12 of his free throws. So there's still positives to Jovan's game.
There are positives in the sense that he's active and he tries to make plays. His decision-making could be better. His execution could be better. I attribute that to, again, inexperience and maturity. It's his fourth Division I basketball game, or fifth. Back out to the phone lines, we're joined by Jack. Jack, thanks for your patience. Welcome to Rebel Extra.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for allowing me the opportunity to speak. You know, I'm not very upset about the start of the season or particularly this game. You know, on the macro level, I look at what Coach Menzies has to work with and the way he came in last year, and I'm not disappointed. I expected this. You know, he's dealing with so many underclassmen and first-year players that have no experience. How can any caller, anyone in the media or any fan expect guys that are playing in their fifth college game, like Mooring and Baxter, some of these guys, how can anybody expect these guys to know what they're doing? You know, a lot of these guys weren't highly recruited guys. Obviously Baxter was, but a lot of these guys, they haven't played at this level. They don't have the experience. They don't know what they're doing. And it's going to take a tremendous amount of time. I expect by the time conference season rolls around that we'll be a decent team. I expect to finish somewhere in the middle of the Mountain West, which embarrassingly is better than we finished the last 2 years with a lot more talent. But as long as the culture changes around the program, as long as the work ethic continues, as long as fundamentals are taught, and I see a lot of coaching going on during the games. I see improvement from players during the game. That's what my focus is this year. I'm not focusing on wins. I'm not focusing on anything else. I just want to see a culture change. I want to see a culture of guys working hard, playing solid defense, playing a team game, which, granted, we didn't see a lot of that. But I think that's the most important thing. So I would caution everybody this year, this is, I don't want to use the word throwaway year, but it really is. It's a reset of the program, and people can be upset about what happened last year and should have happened and so on and so forth and the timing. But the bottom line, it is what it is. This is what we have. So in my mind, what I think we should all go into these games with the idea is we just want to see progress. We want to see the proper culture installed. We want to see recruiting improve, which I believe he will bring in solid classes. And I do think that Marvin is a good basketball coach. And more importantly, I think Marvin's staff has some tremendous basketball coaches on his staff. So I do think that this program will improve, and I do think in time we will be a very strong program again. But this year, guys, don't get upset at these kids, man, because these kids, they're so young, they're babies. They don't know what they're doing, and it's going to take them time. Just give them the time, have some patience, and everything will be okay. That's all I have to say.
All right, Jack, the voice of reason.
Yeah, but you can also, I think you still get upset. Like, for example, when Ofebu travels on two possessions in a row, you can get upset about something like that. When Javon Mooring, despite, you know, playing his first action in Division I these last few games, Jack's like just throws up a pass for Troy Baxter when he's not paying attention. Those are things you can get upset at. But I understand his overall point where it's there's going to be some growing pains. And I said it coming into this game, it's, you know, when you watch them on the floor, they've shown progress little by little. Tonight was a bump in the road. Hopefully they progress, and tomorrow we see those improvements again.
You hold both thoughts concurrently. This is a process-oriented endeavor. Jack is right. Let's take a look at this season and look what the real mission is, and that's to prepare us to move forward in the future. Mm-hmm. You're going to win some. You're going to lose some. Tonight got a little ugly, but I tell you, one of the things I'm blowing away, they're down 50-43, 7:40 to go. It looks like TCU's about to pull away. Well, Fabu, boom, a long three, and then the Rebels get the ball back, boom, Mooring, a long three, and all of a sudden it's 50-49. I'm saying, these kids are competing. Are they going to steal this game after everything we've been through? And you say to yourself, it would be nice it was 50-49, but we weren't throwing Hail Marys because you hit three threes in the first 3 minutes of the game, and those two threes and the rest of the other 36 minutes of the game, you had a total of four threes when you could have been running a much more efficient offense. Let's go back out to the phone lines. Let's try it again, Josh. Hopefully we've got better cell service this time.
Yeah. Apologize. Sorry about that, guys. Can you hear me okay?
Much better.
Maybe just cut your phone out because you were trying to talk mess about Jovan. So I was just...
Sorry about that. We were talking about Mooring and Jonathan, something that you said that he's the best penetrator on the team, I think you said.
Yeah.
And I disagree with that because part of being a great penetrator is finding other guys. You don't penetrate necessarily to score. You penetrate to be able to find your teammates. He's not very good at finding his teammates. He turns the ball over, and it's one thing if you don't show up in a game. Not showing up is, you know, playing 15 minutes, maybe not taking a shot. Oh, he showed up, but he turned the ball over more than he scores points. That's not good. I think he's a poor man's version of Seegers last year. And, you know, I understand that Menzies doesn't have a lot to work with. Why not put Zion in for a couple minutes? Let's see what he can do. You know, I don't know. I just think there's other options, and I think you have to try other. I don't think Mooring is a legitimate Division I college basketball player. That's just my opinion.
All right, thanks a lot for checking in, Josh. And the jury is still very much out. There is a couple things he does. He picks up his dribbles sometimes before he knows what he's going to do, and he's got this one habit, JT, that makes my teeth itch, and that's when you're pushing the ball off the floor and you leave your feet to make a pass.
Yeah.
And when you're in midair, you still haven't made a decision what pass you're going to get, and if you're the guy in the third row, you're going to get some souvenirs because it's happening more than it should be, and many times those are possessions. You brought it up in the South Alabama game. Mm. The Rebels would get within one, and boom, they're down by six again. Why empty possessions?
Well, and the one thing I'll agree with, too, is Zion Mooring. I feel like he should get some run at point. We thought he was going to get more run to see if he could handle the position. We haven't really seen him, but it goes back to my question with Menzies is there's a couple players where we haven't seen them get minutes, and you wonder what exactly the thinking is behind it.
Well, we're not at practice. Yeah. He did say players have to earn playing time. You don't know if it's an effort thing, defensive thing, or they're just young. There's a lot of freshmen. All right, we're going to take one more call before we take our break. Let's go back out to the phone lines. We're joined by Jordan. Jordan, thanks for your patience. Welcome to Rebel Extra.
Yeah, I just, Jack, the previous caller, made a lot of good points, but just keep in mind in that game, I mean, young, immature players, we were in the game until the refs kind of made some ill-advised calls. Changing the momentum there at the end. And the last thing is, where's the Rebel fans at? The place is empty. Let's get out and support a young team and a new coach.
Yeah, and that was my concern. Thanks, Jordan. That's a fair observation. The crowd is engaged. Mm-hmm. Here's how I know they're engaged, because when transfer Jalen Fisher checked into the game, he booed. they booed him lustily, and every time he touched the ball, yeah, they booed the hell out of him. So what fans were there were engaged, but it would be nice to see a more robust, packed Thomas and Mack so the Rebels can create a semblance of a home court advantage.
I thought tonight looked like, well, I have to see the final number, but I thought tonight looked like one of their better crowds.
Yeah, it filled in. It was a bit of a late arriving crowd. He's John Von Tobel. I'm Bernie Fratto. Rebels fall tonight, 63-59 to TCU. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to try to catch up with Mark Anderson, the beat writer for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. We've got some questions we believe he could answer, and we're respectful of his deadline. We're not sure if we'll be able to get him, but we'll try. So stick with us, folks. Still a lot more show to go. Don't go away. You're listening to Rebel Extra.
Text the show by sending ESPN to 69187 or give us a call at 364-1100. This is Rebel Extra.
Back on Rebel Extra, ESPN 1100, 100.9 FM. Bernie Fratto, John Von Tobel. Give us a call, 364-1100, or text 69187, preface ESPN, and join in the action. Rebels fall tonight, 63-59 at TCU. At this time, we're joined by a gentleman been wanting to get on. He'll be a fixture for this year's Rebel Extra when his schedule permits. He's the beat writer for the UNLV Run on Rebels. Let's say hello to Mark Anderson. Mark, thanks for taking time out tonight.
Thanks for having me on, Bernie. I'm glad we finally made this work.
Yes, sir. One of the things I want to start out with, it came as a surprise. I'm referring to Christian Jones. It was a surprise the other night when we found out he was going to play. We heard it was precautionary. Then we found out he's not playing tonight. It's a foot issue, and now the word is he may be out a few weeks. Do you have any idea what the nature of his injury is? They say it's his foot, but specifically what?
I don't know. Marvin Menzies at the postgame presser wouldn't go into any details, and he stated right away that he wasn't going to go into details about it other than to say he might miss a few weeks, but he said he'd know better tomorrow night. So, when you hear a few weeks, you start thinking, well, maybe something's broken. I don't know. I mean, it would just be speculation on my part what it might be.
All right, then let's talk about Chuck Ndebele. He's had a foot issue. He didn't play tonight, and we certainly could have used both those players in the low post. Any update on him?
Yeah, it sounded like that is more precautionary from what Menzies was saying tonight, that they're choosing to rest him, and they're going to rest him tomorrow night against Western Kentucky as well. They're thinking more long-term with him, that they would rather him, when he comes back, to come back fully healthy rather than trying to work his way back into playing. It doesn't sound like it's nearly as serious as what Christian Jones is dealing with.
Bench didn't perform very well, but part of that is because Menzies didn't really give a lot of the guys minutes. Coupette is one that sticks out to me, that the minutes have been up and down. Did he give any reason as to why?
No, I think he felt like he needed to shorten the rotation against TCU just because it's in the first few games, I believe he was kind of experimenting with his lineup, and I think he treated this game. He said tonight he's treating this as like a regular tournament, sort of a Mountain West-type tournament atmosphere. So I think he went in thinking that he would shorten the rotation by design because that's kind of what you do down the stretch and when you get into those types of games.
I am curious as to your thoughts on Jovan Mooring. He's had some up-and-down performances tonight, obviously down, but he has become the subject of ire for UNLV fans in this early season.
Well, tonight, he just played a bad game tonight, and he was completely out of control at times. When they had opportunities to make a key shot, he would turn the ball over or have create some other bad play. So he's had a lot of those types of moments in this early part of the season. He's also had moments where he's done a lot of good things. He had that one stretch where he made, was it 10 out of 11 free throws that mm-hmm. was really the key in that one game. So he's got ability. He can provide a lot of good stuff. I just I think he's having a hard time making the leap to this level. You remember, he not only went to junior college, it
right.
was, you know, lower level division junior college. So I think it's a really difficult step up for him. But I do think he has some talent. He's just having a hard time figuring out what to do with that talent. And you know, I can see him being the kind of player that who, you know, as time goes on, he will figure it out a bit more. And I don't know if he'll ever be an outstanding player, but I can see him being the kind of player who'd be a pretty good contributor.
Bernie Fratto, John Von Tobel. This is the Rebel Extra post-game show. We're joined by beat writer of the Las Vegas Review-Journal, Mark Anderson. Mark, Chris Clyburn, a very eventful early career with the UNLV Runner Rebels, had his knee scope, took a knock to his hip, again, a knee to his hip, I think, against South Alabama. Tonight, an elbow to the head, courtesy of Desmond Bain, left the floor. I'm assuming he's okay because he started the second half.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he got put back out there, so obviously, you know, you would think they would have had checked him for concussion. So obviously, they were pleased that with the results to be able to put him right back out there. You know, he just hasn't been. You're right. He just hasn't been the same all season. He had that incredible exhibition stretch where he, you know, looked like this is going to be the best player this season, and he just hasn't performed since. And it's just been one little injury. No, I shouldn't say little injury, but it's been one injury after another. This really slowed his development. I still think he's got the potential to be a really outstanding player. And if he can get healthy, I think he could be a great player even this season. But it's just, you know, it's frustrating seeing a player like that where you know he's got so much talent and that he's just not able to produce like you know he can.
The Rebels really struggled against that zone defense against TCU. I was about to say Pitt. What reasons did Menzies give as to why they were having so much trouble with that?
He took the full blame for that. He said that they didn't practice much on zone because Jamie Dixon's been known as more of a man-to-man coach throughout his career. So he said, you know, when you're preparing for a game, you have only so many hours to prepare, and you kind of have to put your emphasis on, you know, certain things. And so they emphasized playing against man-to-man defense. And so when they faced the zone, it caught them by surprise, and they weren't prepared for it. And like I said, he took full blame for that.
Wrapping it up with Mark Anderson of the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Mark, what's the mental state of this team right now? I thought in the second half they looked a little tired, stood around on offense, and clearly they started to get overpowered on the boards. They got to play a back-to-back, and it's a young group. How do they? What's their mental state heading into tomorrow night?
Well, in some ways, it may be good they come right back tomorrow because then they can't dwell on this loss too long. This is clearly one that got away. You know, Menzies talked about the post-game presser about how this is really a game they should have won. And you know, if you've gone to any one on the team and said over the final 4.5 minutes, TCU is not going to score a field goal and they're going to struggle at the line and it's going to be a close game, every one of them would have thought they would have won the game. And they should have won the game. They shut TCU down, but they couldn't get out of their own way, and it's one of those losses you come away thinking, you know what, this really should have been a win, and so you know tomorrow they get a chance to come back and kind of make up for it. You know, if they can come out of this weekend with a split, I think that's really good, because you know if they won tonight, they would have faced Washington tomorrow and they would have been a substantial underdog in that game. And so they, you know, I think a 1-1 in this weekend would have been good anyway.
Right.
Now they got to win tomorrow. It's no given. But if they can win tomorrow, then I think they should come out this weekend generally feeling okay about themselves.
You know, one quick thought looking ahead: Western Kentucky in a bit of a rebuild mode of their own. First year coach, they lost their backcourt from last year. They start 3 5th-year seniors. They hung with Washington in the first half tonight, but then there was a 33-3 run in the second half. And the Huskies do what they do and blew them out by 40. Any thoughts previewing the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers prior to tomorrow night's game?
Yeah, it's a game, I think. I don't know. It has as much to do with UNLV as the opponents. You know, what we're just talking about, what kind of mental frame is UNLV in. If UNLV comes out and is confident, like we've seen is you know just recently as Tuesday, then I think they'll probably win the game. But you know if they're still kind of remembering what happened tonight, not quite over it, then I think they're going to struggle. Now, still not having Jones, and that's a problem that's not going away. Not having DeBelli, it's a problem that's not going away tomorrow. So I think they're going to get a pretty good game, and facing those three seniors. You know, we've seen where that's given them fits already, because you know we still a team trying to come together. I just think a lot of it depends on how quickly they put this game tonight behind them.
Fair enough. All right, Mark, we certainly appreciate your insights. We'll be reaching out to you a lot this year, even though the Rebels are 3-2. There were only five games in. There's been a lot to talk about, and certainly I'm still trying to get my grip on the identity of this team, so we'll certainly be leaning on you for your input.
Yeah, I think that's going to be an ongoing process on both our ends.
Right. All right, thanks again for your time, Mark. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you, Bernie. Have a good night.
That was Mark Anderson of the Las Vegas Review-Journal checking in tonight. He's the beat writer. He'll be at every game. He travels with the team. We're going to take our final break of the evening. Rebels win Rebels fall 63-59 to TCU. But interestingly enough, you wouldn't think it'd be this close when you hear some of the numbers we're about to give you when we come back to the other side. He's John Von Tobel. I'm Bernie Fratto. Bobby Machado producing. Stick with us. Don't go away. You're listening to Rebel Extra.
Now, back to Rebel Extra on ESPN 1100, 100.9 FM.
Back on Rebel Extra, 364-1100. Give us a call. Be part of the action. I'm Bernie Fratto. He's John Von Tobel.
Real names, please. Real names.
And the Rebels fall tonight to TCU 63-59, but I got to tell you, John, if you're a glass-half-full guy, if you would have told me before the game that the Rebels would turn the ball over 19 times, miss 10 three-pointers, they'd only get to the line, the free-throw line, 10 times the entire game, I would have thought it would have been worse, but somehow the Rebels are able to hit these long bomb threes as they did with time running out. There were 7 minutes to go in the game. TCU leads 50-43. Ochiofebu. I mean, we're not talking a three. We're talking about a long three. Then it's 50-46. Rebels get the ball back. Jovan Mooring comes up the floor. An even longer three. And then and the next thing you know, it's 50-49. And the Rebels sort of hung around. And TCU couldn't hit their free throws either. They missed 13 free throws, or 53% from the line. By the way, they were only TCU, 6-24 from three-point land. This was an inartful game. And I give Jamie Dixon a lot of credit, because what he did was put a defense on the floor and personnel on the floor, starting with this Vladimir Brodzianski, that thwarted the Rebels in their current state. And the other question I might ask, and this is somewhat lame, but what would have happened, what might have happened if the Rebels would have had a healthy Christian Jones? And they would have had a healthy Chetan Dembele, they might have stolen this game tonight.
I mean, you're definitely, I think, pulling down a couple more rebounds if you have Chris Jones in the game. I don't know how much Dembele affects it, just because he's been really limited in the minutes that he has already seen in the past games. So I don't know how much of a difference he would make. But Christian, for sure, you're looking at 10 points and maybe five more rebounds, and you don't know what that does, obviously, and to change the swing of things. And when it comes to Dixon, I mean, we talked about it a little bit earlier. When you looked at, because there was a moment where UNLV and TCU were matching 2-3 zone to 2-3 zone for a good minute.
Yep, they did.
TCU's 2-3 was so much more active, with guys collapsing on passing lanes, getting deflections and things of that nature, where UNLV's was a little bit more passive. And I think that plays into Dixon being a good coach. I mean, he had them very active on the defensive end.
Well, they were closing off passing lanes, and the Rebels' refusal to attack the gaps was, to a great degree, one of the reasons they had so many poor possessions in the second half. And when you're trying to penetrate a zone and you're throwing a lazy bounce pass, and Jamie Dixon's got a little bit of length in the middle, and some guys are a little more. I want to give TCU a little bit of credit. When they were down 11-2 and 16-8, Dixon called timeout. TCU looked poised. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a long way to go. The game just started. They've hit three bombs. By the way, Troy Baxter picked up his third foul just 7 or 8 minutes into the game. They probably could have used him a little more. One of the things we'll be able to observe here coming up shortly is, does a Zion Morgan perhaps get on the floor a little bit more? A Ben Coupet, perhaps Troy Baxter earlier in the game, Georgie Slavonchinin. Maybe he's your guy.
Oh yeah, he is.
Does he know, by the way? Have you like a
break? I have not gotten to talk to Georgie yet. That day will happen. But I will be the professional.
You guys like Facebook friends yet or anything? Or?
One day. I don't even know if he has Facebook. Georgie, he's from another country. Maybe he's got like
Facebook. Well, they have Facebook in other countries. Yeah.
Well, I was thinking maybe he's behind. Maybe he's still got MySpace. Either way.
Maybe he's got Tinder.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to get in the way of that
one. All right. There you go. But the bottom line is, even with no Christian Jones and no checking to Bellet tonight, Marvin Menzies still went 9 deep on his bench. And I think he's going to have to, at least until conference starts, get lots of guys, lots of minutes to see if he can find that combination that when he needs a defensive stop, see if he can find that rotation that can put together 4 or 5 or 6 good offensive possessions in a row.
Yeah, and it doesn't really help. When you go 9 deep, that's great. But when you only give 2 of those guys 7 minutes and 3 minutes, I mean, you got to give them a little bit more time on the floor.
All right, that's going to do it for tonight's edition of Rebel Extra. On behalf of my broadcast team, producer extraordinaire Bobby Machado and John Von Tobel, I'm Bernie Fratto, bidding you good night. Next up for the run of Rebels, tomorrow, a date with the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers at 5 p.m. tip at the Thomas and Mack. So we'll see you then. In the meantime, tonight's final score, Texas Christian
63.
Horned Frogs.
Yeah.
TCU Horned Frogs 63, UNLV Runner Rebels 59. Good night, folks. Drive safely. That's the last time I run a tongue from that place. Go Rebels. See you tomorrow night at the Thomas and Mack.
Football pregame at 11:30 with me and Steve Cofield.